Good morning. 6:19 a.m. on July 17th, Tuesday morning, 2012. It's a beautiful day. It's not as humid, perhaps, as I was expecting. And the reduced humidity shows in terms of it's a little bit warmer than yesterday, but it doesn't feel quite as warm. So that's a good thing. So I've got just a little bit more to go in this last pass before Zyphira's call goes out to copy editors. I've got a couple lined up. I figure if I run it through a couple, I might collect a few more of the errors that otherwise I might miss. I've been quite delightfully absorbed in a beta read for an author that I haven't read before, Sidney Swanson, C-I-D-N-E-Y, Swanson. It's a very interesting YA. And I got it so that my kids could read it. And of course, my kids haven't been in a reading mood this last few days, so I've been kind of reading along. And yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm enjoying it. About halfway. 1 mile in 18 minutes and 12 seconds. Okay. Thank you, Endomondo. I started it after I took the photograph so that the time where I'm standing still doesn't count against my lap time. So I'm doing good in terms of walking pace. It's a title Saving Mars and it'll be out later this year. It's pretty cool. As I said, I'm enjoying it. Today's class thing was on, we're talking about no significant difference research again still. I actually did the post for them a day early and put all my cards on the table before they had an opportunity to write their own view of it. And that was kind of dumb, but oh well. Class is almost over. One of the class members came up with the idea that, well, if we know that there's no significant difference, then we can tell administrators who want to spend a lot of money on technology that they don't really need to do it, which is true. They don't really need to do it because there's no significant difference. Because a bad class is still a bad class. Which just seems to be the point that they didn't quite grasp. So I talked a little bit this morning about the affordances that technology does provide. If we stop looking at it as a substitution and start looking at it as an addition. If we look at the things that we can't do without the technology, but could do with it. Collaborative work, for example, is very difficult without collaborative technology. And even if it's simple collaborative technology, the opportunity to do it across international borders is quite powerful in terms of motivation. The opportunity to do it even across time zones is pretty powerful. The opportunity to give learners the chance to participate in a wider conversation than the one that occurs in their classroom is important. And the opportunity to provide alternate representation is really important. And the problem with using, for example, whiteboard and marker is that you're restricted in what you can present in terms of media to what you can draw or write on a board. And while that's good, there are other things that could be done. And the example I gave was studying Bach. And that if you're studying Bach, it's all well and good to read biography, but if you study Bach and don't listen to any of his music, you're missing some fundamental understanding of the man, some fundamental knowledge that this is the man who wrote that piece of music, that complex interweaving of theme and motif, of melody, of counterpoint. That understanding of him is lost if all you do is read, he was born, he lived, he married, he fathered children, and he died. Even if you read that he's deaf, or became deaf in his later years. So, yeah, this idea of alternate representation, this idea of having the opportunity to not replace a lesson, which is what all of the media comparison studies are talking about. They're talking about replacement, which is such a short-sighted and stupid idea to begin with. Anyway, I don't expect any of them, will get it. But the idea is out there, so we'll see what happens. My participation in the class is largely over. I've got this one last week, about 3-4 more podcasts to do for them. And then they're on their own for the last week. I'm encouraging them to send me drafts of their papers so that I can critique the papers before they finalize them. And I've also told them that they can't use PowerPoint. So I nobody's come back and said, well, if I'm not going to use PowerPoint, how do I do this? I haven't had anybody come back with that yet. They've also given them the clue that Alan Levine's 50 Plus Ways to Tell a Story is a good place to start to look for ways to tell a story. I've also cautioned them against using tools like Storybox to create a PowerPoint. A list of bullets is not telling me a story. And I want them to tell me a story. I want to start them thinking about how to take a collection of information and turn it into a compelling story. Probably should link to the Google Plus Star Party that Pamela Gay put up on as part of her TAM presentation. That really is astonishing. Ah. And good news, Evo liked Deborah Geary's book. To bring you up to speed, if you are just coming in the middle of this conversation in my head, a while back, Deborah put out a new book, A Nomadic Witch, which is her homage to grumpy old men. That's my words, not hers. But one of her characters has had a problem that has gone on for 3 books now. The 4th book addresses his problem. So it's really an interesting take. I read it and enjoyed it a great deal. I'm a beta reader, so I see it before anybody else does. And so I posted it. And about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago now, it's been a while, Evo picked up my blog post and used it as an example of how to do social media marketing where I shared something that I like with my fans. And he is one of my fans, so he took my advice and he bought the book. But because it was book four, he had to go back and buy book one. And so now he hasn't bought just one book on my recommendation. He's bought two, which is an interesting finding as well. But he also spelled out the risks involved in my promoting that book on my blog. Because if I'm wrong, then my social capital goes down with my fans, because it's not something that they really liked, and I sent them in a direction that they weren't happy with, and that's not a good thing. So he did a Google Plus blurb about it a while back, and the thing to remember is that Ivo hates fantasy. He really does. He really does not like fantasy at all, despite the fact that he wrote a fantasy writer's handbook. But he doesn't like fantasy at all, and or contributed. I won't say he wrote it, but he contributed to a fantasy writer's handbook. And so he's taken a chance on that, based largely on Ravenwood and my reputation, because while he does hate fantasy, he loved Ravenwood, and he can't really figure out why. Because he's definitely not in the demographic. And speaking of not in the demographic, Deborah Geary's demographic is not exactly fantasy-hating middle-aged men. So I've sort of been waiting to find out what he thought about it. I had a few hints a week ago, where he said, okay, would you be willing to get on to a Google Hangout to do books and beer with them on Thursday night? It's one Thursday night. Deb Geary and I, to talk about how do you write compelling stories where nothing happens? Which is an interesting question, because I don't know how. The idea that we write stories set in worlds that people want to live in goes back to the Hugh MacLeod, the market for something to believe in is infinite. And I think it wouldn't work if we didn't have good characters, if we didn't have people that we wanted to learn about, we wanted to know, that we wanted to succeed, that had problems. Now, Ishmael always had a problem. It wasn't a very big problem. And a lot of times, the solution that he came up with it was kind of bass-ackwards. But there was a couple of places where he was quite patently a jerk. And nobody really, a couple of people called me on the worst, most egregious one. But he's not universally a nice guy. He was quite self-centered in a lot of ways. So anyway, yeah, he posted his follow-up today on Google Plus and pimped out A Modern Witch, which is the first book of the series, and he's hooked. He's not in the demographic, but he's hooked. So how do you do that? Man, I wish I knew. I wish I could reduce it, distill it to the essence of how that works. And part of it is the world and the vision of the world that says people are not inherently evil. Some people do bad things. Bad things happen to folks. Some of it's random. Some of it's stupid. A lot of it is stupid. A lot of it is random. And a lot of it is stuff that, you know, you can't predict. You can't predict. And having people who react authentically in those environments, having people who respond not with a raised fist, but with an outstretched hand. Now, that's a big difference. When you look at the majority of fiction that gets published, and it's very seldom that what's offered is an outstretched hand. What's frequently offered is a fist. So it's an interesting take. And I think the real secret to it is writing the story that you want to read without having to worry about whether or not it was going to be marketable, because I don't have to market my book. I don't have to try to convince an agent that it's a story that the agent can sell to a publisher by convincing the publisher that the publican should sell the book to a bookstore, who has to turn around and convince a bookstore that they can sell the book to a customer. And that chain, for all that Ryden is in the middle of it at the moment, that chain has been broken. And Deborah Geary and I both sell more or less directly to our fan base. And Ryden is a bit of an issue for me. Deborah doesn't have that problem. It's one of the reasons she's riding above me 1,000 points or more in terms of sales in the Kindle store. That, and she's really embraced the Kindle Kool-Aid. She's very much on board with the Kindle infrastructure. She's enrolled all of her books in Kindle Select. She doesn't have any offerings anywhere else. She offers a trade-in policy for her fans who are not on Kindle, so that if you send her, and I forget how she has it set up, but I think if you send her a receipt for a purchase on Kindle, she'll send you whatever format you want. And that works, because it's focusing all of her marketing in one channel. And it's the biggest bookstore in the world. So that makes a big difference in terms of her ability to leverage the infrastructure that Kindle has that nobody else. Up to our armpits in airplanes here this morning. That she leverages that infrastructure like nobody else can, because she has a large fan base. She sells a lot of books. She gets a lot of attention from Amazon. And it works out. And here I have, I've nattered almost the whole way. My goodness. I can't believe how many miles I have walked. 830, if not today, then tomorrow. It's 800 and maybe 828 today. The diet's going well. I need to make bread again today. Baked bread this morning, I think. Kids have decided that my bread is not bad. They have still have trouble cutting it because I discovered that they're trying to use a paring knife. And when I showed them how easy it was with the serrated knife that I bought to cut bread, they were like, "Oh, I didn't know that was there." Now you do. I have a salmon. I have half a salmon. I have to figure out what I'm going to do with it. I really should cook it. Maybe I'll put it in the barbecue pit and smoke it today. Anyway, I made it. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day, and I will talk to you then.